Thanks to Holm for joining us this hour. Happy to have you here. In World War II, when the United States needed to quickly ramp up production of wartime material, planes, tanks, guns, ammunition, uniforms, everything, the government opened defense production facilities all over the country. Factories, they either retooled the existing ones or they built new ones. And in some places where there were particularly large defense production facilities, either a large number of retooled plants or a bunch of new ones that were built, one of the things that emerged pretty quickly as a bottleneck for our country mobilizing for that war was this conundrum of where all the workers would live who worked in these newly built and newly retooled production plants. In an already crowded city like Detroit, for example, the government realized in 1941 that they were going to have to quickly add hundreds of thousands of units of housing in order to bring in hundreds of thousands of new workers to staff these defense production facilities that were being retooled from civilian use in Detroit, or in fact newly opened to make more material in that city. And that math is easy to see, right? You need to build a whole bunch of new stuff. You need a whole bunch of new or regional or expanded facilities to build that stuff. You need a lot of people to work in those facilities, and so they need a place to live. The math is simple, right? On paper, that's all very rational. It all just follows. It's very logistical. It makes sense. In practice, though, it was its own kind of war. White Detroit residents got one of their U.S. senators, a Democratic senator named Prentice Brown, to lead an effort in Washington to declare that new housing built in Detroit for defense plant workers would be whites-only housing. And that effort in Washington actually seemed like it would work for a while before it didn't, before they sort of clawed it back. Ultimately, it was black families in Detroit who moved into some of the new housing. White residents put up this billboard across from some of that new housing. As you can see here, it says, "We want white tenants in our white community." See the American flags they put up there in the corners of the sign? Isn't that a nice touch? That was February 1942, because in February of 1942, February 28th to be exact, two dozen black families, again, these are families of workers at the new defense plants, two dozen African-American families tried to move into that new housing that had been built for defense workers in Detroit. White residents organized a tight picket around that housing. They also blocked the moving trucks from being allowed in to drop off any of the belongings of the new families that had just arrived. The white mobs attacked the black families and forced them back by throwing rocks at them. It turned into a riot. Dozens of people were injured. That was February 1942. In April 1942, these two men were arrested for having organized the violence. They were indicted by the federal grand jury. These two men were part of something called the National Workers League. That's kind of a weird name for a group organizing anti-black violent riots, right? I mean, these were defense workers whose families these guys were attacking. What is this National Workers League? Ah, yes, turns out it was this kind of a National Workers League. This is one of those same two men arrested for organizing the Detroit Defense Housing Race Riot. This is him in Life magazine in 1944. He was in Life magazine in 1944 because by then he had been indicted again, this time as part of an alleged seditious conspiracy to violently overthrow the entire U.S. government. He was still under indictment for organizing the violent attack on black families in Detroit when he got hit with that second indictment for trying to overthrow the U.S. government by force. It is not a dotted line. It is a through line between terrorizing and physically attacking minorities in the United States and wanting to get rid of democracy and rule instead by force. These are not unrelated concepts. This is a man named Theodore Bilbo. He was governor of Mississippi twice in the 19-teens and 1920s. He was a Democrat and a Dixiecrat before the realignment on the parties on racial issues that happened in the 1960s. Theodore Bilbo was just profiled in the Washington Post this weekend for reasons that will become clear in a moment if they are not already. Governor Bilbo wrote a book in 1947 that was called Take Your Choice, Separation generalization. In the book, he argued that white people were being replaced, that the white race would in fact disappear if white people allowed non-white people to live freely among them. If they allowed that to happen for much longer, white people would disappear. It was a plot, see? The existence of black people and other non-white people, this insistence that white people somehow had to abide by them in life here in America, that was a plot deliberately designed to eliminate the white race. White people had to fight back against that. July 1946, as Theodore Bilbo was running for re-election to the United States Senate, he said the federal government was shipping in blacks to vote in Mississippi in his race. Said those black voters shipped in would, of course, swamp the votes of white people, and so he said that, quote, every red-blooded white man must use any means to keep the N-words away from the polls in Mississippi. He said, quote, and if you don't know what that means, you're just plain dumb. Shock you to learn that Theodore Bilbo was also a crook. A Senate investigation found that in exchange for him helping certain construction firms get government contracts, he took bribes from those companies. Bribes including a new Cadillac, also a swimming pool, also, I kid you not, the excavation of a lake to create an island for his own. After calling for race war in America to save the white race from being people to use terrorist means against black Americans who might have wanted to vote in his re-election campaign, after being found to be a rank criminal, taking repeated huge bribes in exchange for his official actions as a United States Senator, Theodore Bilbo won re-election to the United States Senate. The other party, the Republicans, controlled the U.S. Senate at the time. They said they weren't sure they were going to seat Theodore Bilbo in the Senate, given what the Senate's own investigation had just turned up about his crimes and all the bribery. Senators, though, united, and they said in response that if Bilbo was blocked from taking his seat in the United States Senate, they would block the seating of every United States Senator in the United States Senate. They would, in other words, shut down the Senate. They would shut down the legislative branch of the federal U.S. government indefinitely. They would end the U.S. Senate unless Theodore Bilbo was sworn in, bribes, terrorism, and all. He was their guy, and they were willing to get rid of the United States Senate in order to stand up for him. The whole standoff was only resolved when Theodore Bilbo had the decency, at least, to go home and die from cancer before the Senate ever came into session that year. So the whole standoff sort of became. And both those examples are from the 40s, which now, like a decade ago, a million of them. This is a man named David Lane. He was part of a paramilitary group that robbed armored cars. They built bombs, they ran military training camps, they counterfeited U.S. currency in large amounts, and ultimately they murdered a Jewish talk radio host in Denver, a man named Alan Berg, in 1984. All of these crimes were committed, all of these murders were committed in the service of setting off what David Lane and his friends hoped would be a race war in which white people in America would kill the attacks on black defense plant workers and their families in Detroit back in the 1940s. David Lane also was later charged with sedition. In addition to all his crimes to try to create race war in America, to try to inspire Americans to rise up and kill non-white people in order to survive, in order to for them to survive as a race, in addition to all the charges that he was convicted of along those lines, he was later charged with sedition, being part of a seditious violent conspiracy to overthrow the United States government by force. Now, David Lane had the good sense to die in federal prison, but before he did so, he managed to popularize a slogan about how white people in America need to kill everyone who's not white in order to protect the future of the white race, because somehow being a white person is such a fragile state of existence, the mere existence of non-white people, mere white people, is enough to make white people melt like they're made of sugar when it's raining. That David Lane slogan about protecting a future for white children, it's a 14-word long slogan, and people on the far right ever since have turned the number 14 into a kind of talisman to promote that slogan. So the number 14 is the kind of thing you might get tattooed on you next to the swastika. Buffalo, New York this weekend. Buffalo News reports that this young man had the N-word painted on the barrel of the gun he used and the number 14 up closer to the stock. And presumably that's for David Lane's 14-word slogan about how white people need to attack all the non-white people, or else about how it's some sort of existential threat to white people for them peacefully to live alongside non-white people as fellow Americans.
The Democrats really want the black vote.
I mean, pick your decade, pick your state, pick your degree of notoriety or obscurity. It's the same thing over and over and over again from the far right in the United States. And it swings back and forth from terroristic violence, murder, to electoral politics, to fantasies about racial purity, to conspiracies about the Jews, to disgust for democracy and a desire, sometimes an effort, to take and hold power by force of arms instead of through our democratic force, the government. It keeps coming up. This is a recurring thing. A justification and a call for violence based on this insane paranoid fantasy that white people are an endangered species as long as there are non-white people around. And any change in the ratio of white people to other people is a sure sign that the global plot to eliminate the white race is approaching its goal. And so white people need to buy guns and stand up and take our country back and make it great again.
This is like, otherwise white almost seems cliche that she's talking replaced. About this. Out of all the stories.
And this weekend it was 10 people killed in Buffalo, almost all of them elderly African Americans. And the shooter decorated his gun with the N-word and the 14-word slogan. And he posted his online manifesto about how white people are so endangered, how they're being replaced. And in August 2019, it was the shooting that killed 23 people, mostly Latinos, at a Walmart in El Paso, Texas. And in that case, that guy, too, posted his online manifesto about how white people are so endangered and how they're being replaced. And before that, it was April 2019, it was the killing in the synagogue in Poway, California, where the killer also posted his online manifesto about how white people are so endangered and how they're being replaced. And before that, it was March 2019, it was the guy in Christchurch, New Zealand, who killed 51 people in two different mosques. And he posted his online manifesto about how white people are so endangered and how they're being replaced. And before that, it was October 2018. It was 11 people killed at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The shooter there posting all over right-wing social media sites about how white people are so endangered and how they're being replaced. And before that, it was August 2017. Those very fine people the former president talked about marching with tiki torches in Charlottesville, Virginia. A show of force, a white male phalanx, shouting to the cameras as they marched about how white people are so endangered, how white people are being replaced. You will not replace us. Jews will not replace us. It is not a new concept. It's not even a new pretext, a new justification for violent, racist terrorism. It has long been so. It is right now being newly popularized, newly mainstreamed by the biggest names in conservative media and even by the leadership of the Republican Party in Congress. But it is an old idea. It is an old and stupid idea. It is an old and stupid and dangerous idea. Old, stupid, and dangerous in equal measure. But now what do we do? Because there's a reason these white men keep killing black people and Jews and Latinos and Muslims in the largest numbers they can. And it is not just because they believe in this ideology and are inspired by it. They
she
are.
Should check her
That's
bed.
What's leading them to kill all these people. But
this is an aberration.
That,
this is not the norm.
The way they're doing it.
And this happens with all
because
races,
they're not
all colors.
Only adherents of that ideology. They but are evangelists
on the same race,
for it
race
as well.
Race.
They want to spread this ideology to
time.
Others. They want to make it famous.
Society and
they want to make it
society.
Popular. They want more white people to understand this concept and think this way and act like them because of it. That's why they all post these stupid manifestos online, these explanations of the supposed
well,
reasons
every
for their
every dumb asshole that commits a crime
so
has a manifesto
to
in their head, at least.
Sophomore, puerile, soft-headed,
has a justification, has some weird
theories.
Bullshit that they think is true.
So we all have to take time to
some
learn it, to understand it, to talk about it, so
some
we can explain and understand
some
why...
Some people paint pictures with it. Tell people everybody everything they're going to do and how much they hate everybody.
In Buffalo this weekend had to be murdered with an assault rifle while they were doing their grocery shopping.
Some people don't.
I mean, what do you do?
You know what I mean? Some people just express themselves in different ways.
We don't know the motive for these repeated terroristic.
When I studied psychology in college, I started thinking it's better to have people open their mouths and make a loud mistake. Because then it can be corrected. Because if they're just quiet and silent about it, then they'll go undetected. And then the pathology will manifest itself.
Seeing that movement for what it is, seeing where it's taking hold and who's aiding and abetting it, that's valuable, if only for trying to head off the next inevitable one of these murderous attacks.
This is so crazy how these people act so, this is like called pearl clutching.
The pretextual justification for their actions.
This has happened all over the world since the beginning of time. People have committed crimes against people of other races. They hate them. It probably happened yesterday, it's probably happened today, it's probably going to happen tomorrow.
But it is nauseating.
So what they're probably just trying to do is... they're not trying to cut off the weapons of mass destruction that our companies in America make and sell to everybody. We're the number one weapons seller in the world.
To be talking about the murderous fantasies they all share.
So they just see this as a power grab. Come to our party, we got your back.
More terrorism.
We're talking about it, nobody else is. Because it happened to black people.
This is a problem not just about murder and violence, but about information. It is about finding a way to learn what's going on, learning enough to be sharp and real about what's happening online, what's happening in real politics to activate these kinds of killers, while also, in so doing, not helping them spread the word, not helping them spread these ideas.
Do they have an icon on the graphic right now telling us how many of the people are black?
How do we do it right now?
A couple of them are white, so that makes you scratch your head.
How do we do it every day from here on out? Joining us now is Ben Collins. He's an NBC News reporter who covers disinformation, extremism, and the internet. Ben, I'm really glad you were able to be here today. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Brad.
So you cover disinformation and extremism for a living. I just want to ask you bluntly, and it's okay if the answer here is no. Is the tension that I'm feeling here real and warranted, this tension between understanding the extremism that's at work here while also desiring to spread it, not to popularize it?
It's a very real tension, and it's something that I fight with personally while doing this job. So I did all Saturday. I was thinking, how do I make sure people understand what's in this manifesto? And also understand mostly that this man is not alone in thinking this. He's part of a community of people who want to murder people without trying to spread that message. And it's really difficult. You know, it's been the last day or two just looking through his...
It starts at the top down. You got a government that wants to kill people.
Yes. Most of them, you know, like a diary since December.
They're not smart enough to...
It's incredibly and deeply
to say, well, these are kids still on the battlefield.
He was going to go to the supermarket
by their leaders,
instead of a church or school, which he thought about.
They need our help.
He got a buckle in a school down the street because he deduced that there were
kids.
More black children in that school because he thought
and just made
they didn't test as well. That's how racist this man was. But he decided instead to go to the supermarket
by Democrats
because he wanted to make sure every black
kind of
person cared for their life everywhere they went.
Not that kind of party.
And I don't really know how to say that to people without quoting him in that way.
So,
but it is the tension that we have.
You yourself.
And just avoiding it now.
I want to say it's okay to kill kids on the other side of the world. Somebody who's mentally ill is not going to understand why
bit,
he can't kill kids on this side of the world.
And frankly, Tucker Carlson tries to do.
Kids, people, my own, is whatever
that's
category.
That's irresponsible. I don't have solutions. I think people
I think somebody who's got a warped, distorted
or
mind can justify murdering people based on...
You can do whatever you want. If you're in 4chan, these people would use a VPN to get around it. That's a website that's based in Japan. There's not a lot of jurisdiction there for us. People will find a way to get to 4chan that wants to get to 4chan. There is a civic responsibility, though, to not take their ideas and take the mark out of it and say it's legitimate political discourse on the highest rated Game Blue show. Or not to run on that as a bundle platform. And I don't know how to make people stop doing that, but instead of stopping, they are absconding from responsibility.
Ben, what happens to these manifestos that get published online, or even the live streams of the killing? attacks, which we saw this weekend in Buffalo, and we saw previously in Christchurch and in other terrorist attacks like this. How do those things live online? How do they function? And do they accomplish what the killers want, which is to both spread and popularize the ideas that motivate them, and also to radicalize and galvanize to action the other people who already believe them?
Absolutely. This man had a very specific plan on what to do. He was in his manifesto, and then he did it. He outlined what he was going to do once he got his camera on his head to go inside.
It's weird that these people want to dissect this stuff.
Video game.
Just the
what he was going to do was he was going to post a link to the manifesto, a link to his Twitch stream, to people who had previously interacted with on Discord. On Discord, never anything. Usually people talk about video games. Just a place to chat on the internet, especially if you're a teenager.
Sometimes they want to villainize somebody like live streaming companies or internet companies or news sources or something to let this
go. What killers do? People here was basically just a series of diaries since December of planning on this attack.
I always want to hear some guilt.
Started to watch this in real time on Twitch. Some of those people started to archive this. And that's how we even know that
you
these
take responsibility
exist, is that some of the bad guys or some of the people who interact with these people at least, you know, knew the ins and outs of 4chan and started posting it there. And that's why this is a problem. It's decentralized. This is something that happened on the Amazon-owned company's servers, Twitch.
I gotta check New York to see if there's a death penalty or not.
Because
if there's a death penalty, you have to
death penalty. Websites, there was an HN knockoff. HN itself is dead.
But they probably don't.
The brand name created a different HN website. This is not something you can stop. This is something if somebody wants to do it, they can get it out there. And they realize, too, that the next person to do this, because they don't think they're the last, will include their name in the next manifesto. You know, it's that bad. Manifesto is, you know, a recitation of everyone else's previous talking points. It's literature to them. And they build on it. In fact, there is, you know, the spookiest part about this, I would say to me,
this guy's creepy.
Is that
some of these people that
they
get here to come on here are just creepers. They just stare weird and read
and
read. It's like, God, just help me. This is your show? You're just having some weird person on here reading stuff? Staring at the camera like weird? All scrubbed up and bleached up and dyed up? Just come on here.
They have figured out exactly the format for white nationalist terror manifestos.
Ben Collins covers disinformation, extremism, and the internet for NBC News, which is a very, very difficult in terms of its toll on people who have to cover it every day and what you have to see. Ben, thank you for what you do.
You didn't cover it. That's bad.
Thanks, Senator. We've got much more ahead here tonight. We're going to be speaking, among other folks, with the state representative, who is the majority leader in the New York State Legislature, who represents the district where these killings happened. We've got a lot ahead to us tonight here in the state.
Recognize everyone for not seeing things the way you see them and not instill fear in people because it's right wing or left wing, you name it. They have wing nuts on both sides and they're sitting there seething and waiting and looking for someone to blame. Now, what type of challenges do law enforcement face? I mean, trying to track down and stop someone like this before an attack, is that obviously there could be red flags, policing involved, but you know, in a free country, you can't just hold somebody because they seem nuts. Yeah, the biggest challenge of domestic terrorism is the First Amendment. I don't mean that the First Amendment is a bad thing, it's a good thing. But law enforcement can't just creep around on the internet looking for threats. They need tips for people. They don't crawl the internet without some sort of predication or some sort of pre-existing information that's been brought to their attention. So they're really relying on tips and leads from people who know and observe the bizarre behavior of people who are percolating, if you will, the things that they're posting, the things they're saying, the things that they're writing. You know, I look at the parents, I look at the people that know this person, and many of the other shooters, the Parkland shooters, think so, as a very similar situation here, where people, you know, some people picked up the phone, some people provided tips and leads. So it's the obligation of law enforcement to follow up on it aggressively. I think they just see too much of this and they get complacent.
Chris Wecker, appreciate your time. Thank you. Thank you. Coming up, the incredible story of one of the survivors who was shot by the suspected gunman outside the ship with the supermarket. Shot up close in the neck. I'll speak with his mom. He survived. I'll speak to his mom about how.
Fantastic. He has some graphics saying the stuff about easily buying a gun.
William F. Buckley was right. Electability is critical. It's crucial because this is a must-hold seat. If Republicans have any chance of taking back control of the U.S. Senate after the midterms, and earlier today, the 5th President of the United States, Donald Trump, is on our radio show. Here's what he has to say.
Look, I've known him for a long time. He's known him for a long time.
Jesus Christ.
The election, and I'm not sure that the other people, I'm pretty sure that the other people will not be able to win.
Joining us now, Pennsylvania Senate candidate Dr. Brendan Ives is with us.
Jesus Christ.
So, in the last 7, 8, 9 days, whatever it's been, Kathy Barnett all of a sudden...
I think he's literally a snake oil salesman. Usually people say that figuratively, but... Yeah, I found out he was a quack some years back. I see him running for office is pretty hilarious. Especially when it's not even his state or his... or his country. His first country, anyway. Because he keeps showing he voted in a Turkish election, and he lives in New Jersey. That's pretty funny, New Jersey. But he wants to be representative in a different state. That's crazy. But that's how the system works. Like, I mean, if you have like an address or a house or whatever relative that you might live in some other state, I guess you could use that address and loan. I think that's kind of what he's doing. Whatever, he's endorsing products that don't look like they work on his show. And he doesn't seem like a serious... doesn't look like he's been anticipating governing that part of the country in that way his entire life. And it's like it's a new thing.
Buffalo, New York has a beautiful, extensive, and famous system of parks. The legendary landscape architect Frederick Law Olmsted, after he designed Central Park in New York City, he had an even bigger vision for Buffalo, a system of multiple city parks connected by tree-lined parkways, thereby integrating the parks into the city. And one of those early parkways was called Humboldt Parkway. And in the first half of the 20th century, a black middle-class neighborhood called Hamlin Park began to emerge around it. It was lovely. And so, of course, as in black neighborhoods and cities across the country, in the 1950s and the 1960s, city planners decided to build a giant highway right through the middle of it. First, they cut down all those brown trees on Humboldt Parkway. Then they dug out the whole parkway to construct an expressway to better connect most of the white suburban drivers to downtown Buffalo. That new expressway cut off that black community in Buffalo. It also poured more pollution into that black neighborhood, which over the decades has had serious health implications for that community. It also cut off black residents stuck on the east side of that highway from the basic necessities of life, like grocery stores. That's why in 2003, something as simple as a grocery store finally opening on Buffalo's east side, that was a big news-making event because residents on the east side had been calling for a grocery store, literally something that basic and simple, for years and years and years before they finally got one. When that grocery store, the Tops Market on Jefferson Avenue, opened in 2003, it became not just the local grocery store, but a community gathering place for the resilience highest concentration of black residents. And then he targeted the place where those residents were most likely to congregate. As NBC's Ben Collins just reported here on our air moments ago, the alleged shooter was amused online about possibly targeting a church in that neighborhood or maybe a school. He decided on a Tubbs grocery store instead because targeting a grocery store was normal. And he wanted it to have the maximum terrorizing effect. He wanted to make black Americans feel unsafe literally anywhere they might go. In 2003, that same year, the Tubbs Market opened on Buffalo's east side. That neighborhood also got a new state assemblywoman. Her name is Crystal Peebles Stokes. Representative Peebles Stokes represents that district to this day. She is now the Democratic majority leader of the New York State Assembly. She's the first woman and the first African American to hold that post. She knows that Tubbs Market on Jefferson Avenue very well. Like just about everybody else in that neighborhood, she does her shopping there too. Joining us now from outside the Tubbs Market neighborhood district is New York State Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peebles Stokes. Madam Leader, thank you so much for joining us. I know this is an incredibly difficult time.
This is a very difficult time. It's very difficult. Some challenges that black people, particularly have had to experience our entire existence in America. Resilient people, and we'll come through this without becoming haters to people like us.
Because that's not what they sell them as.
Can you tell us how your constituents are?
That's worse than like saying a brand name for a product. Like
rollerblades. The market itself is a really central gathering place in the community.
It's not called an assault rifle.
It's
called an Armalite rifle.
And because there are other.
And they're legal, and they should be legal.
It's a place where a lot of people came together.
The Founding Fathers never intended on the government having nukes and hand grenades and submarines. And F-16s,
and all the other shit they have in the
goddamn parking lot having pop guns
and
water pistols, shit like that. Yeah, I think the government wants to give us a secure fucking border and stop treating half the world like dog shit, including a lot of its own citizens. Then maybe we can talk about giving up weapons. You don't see them giving up their weapons. You don't see them making people's weapons manufacturers stop selling rockets and machine guns and shit like that. So I think people can be trusted with these weapons. I think people do, right? Farmers use them.
This is the last time that
veterans like them.
Like this happens in America because it doesn't have to. There are things we can
the Founding Fathers knew in 1776 that if they didn't have the right to bear arms, that they wouldn't have broken away from England. So they put that right there in the papers, in the early documents, saying everybody's allowed to have guns. Have a gun. Sure, by all means, have a gun. Protect yourself. Protect the country. We're going to rise up against the government. Because they...
Her district is home of the site of this weekend's shooting. Madam Leader, our condolences to you and to your constituents. And I really appreciate you talking with us tonight. Good luck, man. Thank you.
Didn't even have a standing military back then when this place was founded.
You are very welcome. I want to thank you. I want to thank the entire state of New York and people across this country who have just poured in their love
big
and resources
ass
to help
lady.
Folks in my district.
You didn't ask people to vote. They have MOABs, bombs called the mother of all bombs. Trump dropped one on Afghanistan. And you're saying that people can't have a semi-automatic rifle in the army white vest? Come on, lady.
This is the right time. This is the right time. Thank you. 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 Thank you.
The anti-gun shtick goes well with the Democratic Party. I guess it goes well with minorities because minorities are often the ones that end up getting killed with gunfighting. So it's a lot of times it's minorities on minorities. Sometimes it's the police. Sometimes it's probably white people. I don't know what I mean. So yeah, their solution is just ban the guns, which is pretty crazy. That's the same solution as well. If they say to take this vaccine cocktail of God only knows what, as we told you to, and you'll be better if you do. This country wasn't founded on the government making people do a whole bunch of weird, crazy shit, taking away all their rights. Some countries are. Some countries that are very, very strict. Some countries you can't do a damn thing. Like some of the Muslim countries, some of the communist countries. Yeah, they don't put up with any shit there. Like the dissent that you see in the minority press and just the citizen press. I think they would shut that down and take people in jail and people in big trouble. We used to have that kind of freedom in America, but it doesn't fly in some places. More commercials. Mm-hmm.